Our gospel reading this morning is from Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 37. Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, 'You shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment.' But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to council. And if you say, 'You fool,' you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell. It was also said, 'Whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce.' But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have heard it was said to those of ancient times, 'You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord.' But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let the word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one."
Nice simple reading about murder and adultery and divorce, right? Dear ones, let's be together in prayer. So often, God, we go about our lives in our turtle shells, resisting things that come in that are a threat to us, being hard on the outside, saying no, not letting things past us. God, that works for us sometimes and is necessary sometimes, but there's also a need for us to take the turtle shells off, to wipe the sunscreen off, to expose ourselves vulnerably to you, to one another, and to the world. So help us to be open, to unclench, to let your word in, that we might see and learn and know, that we might become transformed in you. Amen. So when I was a new father and Owen was just starting to crawl and to get himself into trouble, I very quickly became the father of no, right? Maybe you have had this experience. No, 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 I said a million times a day. No, you cannot grab my beard, which was shorter back then. No, you cannot throw your peas. No, 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 no. I even learned, thanks to Deirdre, the sign language for no, right? So if we were in a social situation and I couldn't like easily shout it or he was across the room, I could just say no, no, right? Learn the sign. So I did this for a while because that's what I did, but I learned over time that saying no really wasn't all that effective. And in fact, the more I said no, the more that Owen wanted to grab or to throw or do whatever it is that I did not want him to do. And still, I saw this. I saw that I was the father of no. I saw that it wasn't a terribly effective parenting strategy, and yet I continued to be the father of no anyway, because I didn't know what else to do or what else to say. So somewhere along the way, I had a conversation with my mother-in-law, Lenore, who said to me some mind-blowing, parent-changing, life-changing wisdom. She said to me, "Kevin, parenting is 90% diversion. Parenting is 90% diversion." And what I've understood that to mean is that it's not enough to just say no. You got to also say yes. Right? You can't just say no, you can't pull the lamp cord. You've got to say yes, you can pull this pull toy. No, you can't throw the peas isn't enough. You've got to say, yes, you can throw this balloon or this stuffed animal as well. So I took that to heart, and I tried it right away, and I found rather quickly the power that came in my parenting when I added a yes to a no that was already there. Now, the Gospels give us no indication that Jesus was a parent, but he seems to understand the power of adding yeses to his no's as well. In the passage, the challenging passage that Dan read for us, this is one of the classic texts of terrors, right? Pastors hate preaching on this passage, primarily because of the divorce one, right? That's really hard to get into. But this is a text of terror. And Jesus is preaching in chapter 5, verses 21 through 37, and he's in the middle of his Sermon on the Mount. He has been born, he's been baptized, he's wandered in the wilderness, and he's begun his public ministry of teaching and healing and calling disciples to follow him. And early on in his public ministry, he becomes quite popular, and an excitement grows around him, and as excitement grows around him, so too do crowds grow around him. So one day he's walking along and he sees this large crowd, and I think he sees it as an opportunity here at the beginning of his public ministry to do some teaching, right? To come out and say clearly to this big crowd who God was and who he was and what God was trying to accomplish through him for all of us. So Matthew tells us that that Jesus moved up to a mountainside, right? This is why we call this the Sermon on the Mount. So he goes up to the mountainside, and there, and to the disciples, and then to the crowds that had surrounded them, he offers an opening salvo, which was in the lectionary last week, but I didn't preach about that. It's called the Beatitudes. One of the most famous passages in Scripture. That word beatitude is a nice churchy word. It just is. It's from the Latin word that means blessed or happy. Right? So the Beatitudes are blessed are the, blessed are the, blessed are the. And so in the Beatitudes, what Jesus is trying to do is in a nice summary way describe for the crowds and for all of us what the kingdom of heaven was all about. What God intended for creation and for all of us, and how that was different than what we experienced in our lives normally and what we expected God had in mind for us, right? So God has a way of reversing, of surprising, as I was talking to the kids about, of turning things upside down. So in the Beatitudes, Jesus says things like, blessed are not the rich, but blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed not are the strong and the powerful, right, but blessed are the meek. So Jesus has a way of reversing things. So it's a way of describing for us this kingdom of heaven that he's talking about, but you know, it's kind of abstract. It's kind of looking at the kingdom from 1,000 miles in the air. So as we get to chapter 5, I think Jesus starts to get real practical and real concrete and to give real specific examples. And so Jesus gives us a series of 6 teachings about murder and adultery and divorce and oaths and justice and loving your enemies. Importantly, in each of these teachings, Jesus uses the same or similar formula. You have heard it said, but I say to you. You have heard it said, but I say to you. You have heard it said that murder is wrong, but I say to you, seek reconciliation. You have heard it said that adultery is wrong, but I say to you, men, women are more than mere objects of lust. So we can see in just these two examples how Jesus is taking the moral and legal prohibitions of the day. He's taking the no's and he's adding yeses to them. No to murder, yes to reconciliation. No to adultery, yes to just relationships. No to divorce that leaves women vulnerable in that culture. And yes to male accountability in the marriage relationship. No to oaths that lead to relationships in business based upon legalism, and yes to relationships built on mutual trust and respect. So Jesus adds yeses to his no's. But why? And why does he do that? And I thought a lot about that this week and why he adopts this particular style in the Sermon on the Mount. And I think it's a pretty straightforward answer. Jesus is a good teacher, right? He knows his pedagogy. He knows how to get information into people, and he knows how to motivate people, not just to think differently, but to behave differently and to be differently. Jesus knows how to move people from one place into another place. And he knows, like I came to know, that it's not enough to be a father of no. It's not enough to just give a list of things you can't do. You ever had teenagers and try to leave them home with the things that they can't do, right? And then that's when keggers start and all this stuff comes out, right? I mean, this is what happens. Lists of no's simply don't work. We have to say no to things, of course. But Jesus understands while you say no, you also have to add a yes. It's not enough to tell people what they need to run away from. You have to cast vision about what they're to run towards. So Jesus offers an alternative yes, saying, don't murder, but in your relationships, live in such a way that communities are strong and relationships are strong, and you don't need to murder anybody anymore. He casts an alternative vision rooted in the ways of God that bring death for no one and life for everybody. So here's the problem. Jesus gives us this teaching style and also this way of being in the world that says no to what we need to say no to and yes to what we need to say yes to. But I think more and more in our culture we're becoming a people of no, at least in the national political landscape that's becoming how we are. I think that's a symptom of who we are here, but also that feeds back and reinforces that. So as an example of this, let's think about President Obama's administration and tenure. And the Republicans during those 8 years became known as the Party of No. Right? I think their detractors gave them that title, but I think many Republicans embraced that, right? As they tried to obstruct everything that President Obama was trying to do. So now here we are, a few weeks into President Trump's administration, and those who had accused the Republicans of being the party of no have become the new people and the new party of no. So, you know, Facebook and social media are wonderful. It's a wonderfully fast way to get information back and forth, and sometimes we can get a pulse of where people are at. And I run in, you know, sort of liberal progressive clergy circles, and I know lots of liberal progressive churchy type Christian folks. And one of the memes that was coming up over and over again this week that people were sharing was simply this. Resistance must become our spiritual practice. Resistance must become our spiritual practice. That as Christians, they're saying, we're called to say no, 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 because of our faith. I thought a lot about that this week. And let me be clear that there are things we need to say no to, right? Jesus was clear that we need to say no to murder and unjust relationships and talk to us about that. I think it's true that we need to say no to racism, no to Islamophobia, and no to policies of exclusion and division and scapegoating of the other. We need to say no to a jingoistic form of nationalism, which we've seen rise. We need to say no to any policies or theologies or ideologies that demonize people, render some voiceless, and make others vulnerable. We need to say no to those things. We need to say no to a whole lot of things. But in the end, as followers of Jesus Christ, we're taught not only to say no, but also to say yes, right? To be rooted and grounded in an alternative yes that is rooted and grounded in the ways of God that don't bring life to some and death to others, but a yes that brings death to no one and life to all. So here's an example of how this plays out in real life. Tracy and Nate and I and about 1,000 other people were at a demonstration down in Montpelier a few weeks ago. This was right after President Trump's executive order halting immigration from 7 majority Muslim nations. So because of my faith, I wanted to go there and bring my presence and my voice to a policy that I feel is entirely against God's ways. So went down there, and I have to admit that I came away from that vigil feeling unsatisfied. I heard energy, I heard excitement, I heard wonderful witness and testimonials from immigrants who were scared and felt vulnerable, scared about what this meant for them and their families, but also for all of us as a whole country. So we heard that was good and important. And we did hear some yeses, but to my ear, the yeses were pretty quiet, whispers really. And it was just a whole lot of loud shouting of no's. And even though they were no's that I agreed with in many cases, I still felt heavy and de-energized and more than a little tired. I wish that we had heard or there'd been a way to cast vision beyond the no. Right? For people to stand up and say, "You have heard it said that the immigration ban is wrong. But I say to you, we need to get our butts into gear and create a world where we don't need to do that stuff. That we can have permeable borders and safety and just relationships for all." I wish we had heard the yeses more than just a whisper. And I wish the yeses that we heard were rooted and grounded in the ways of God that bring death to no one and life. So that's our charge going forward. In the days that are to come, there will be many things that we need to say no to, not because of our politics, but because of our faith in Jesus Christ. But at the same time that we say no, we need to be those who say yes and who shout yes. And more than shouting yes, we need to be people who live the yeses. In the small details of our lives, as we live those yeses out in the context of this community. And as we shout yes and live yes, other people can see us. And may God make it so that they see the kingdom too. So dear ones, our call in the coming days is to be the people of no and the people of no.